This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Gwen Tompkins. In 1975, a 3,000-year-old monarchy reportedly ended with a pillow to the face. Haile Selassie, the last emperor of Ethiopia, was said to be a descendant of King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. After 40 years on the throne, he's widely believed to have been murdered in his bed by revolutionaries, too impatient to wait for an old man to die in peace. Those last days of the monarchy and the brutal beginnings of the socialist military junta that replaced it provide the backdrop of Maza Mengistu's first novel. Beneath the Lion's Gaze tells the story of a family and a nation at war with itself. Maza Mengistu joins us from our New York bureau. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So may I ask you, how much time have you spent in Ethiopia? Were you born there?
I was born in Ethiopia, in Addis Ababa, during the early days of the revolution. And I left when I was quite young, but I still had family in Ethiopia, so I went back on a regular basis. And as I was writing this book, I went back also and did some research.
And in your novel, which actually tells the story of a family's evolution during this time, you also provide some detail into the emperor's final moments. The emperor's death is widely believed to have been murder, although the military revolutionaries, the Derg, claimed that he had died of natural causes. In your story, you describe his death with some detail. How did you come to that image of Haile Selassie at the end of his life?
When Emperor Haile Selassie died in August of 1975, the day after he died, the Derg had put an announcement out on the radio saying that he had died from natural causes, from surgery. And everyone knew that wasn't the case. And it wasn't until the Derg fell, the regime fell in 91, 92, that stories started coming out. And it became widely believed that he was actually either smothered or strangled. And so I worked with that when I was imagining the last days of his life in my book. I was trying to imagine not just this emperor that could trace his lineage back 3,000 years to King Solomon, but I was trying to think of what it might feel like to be an 82, 83-year-old man and suddenly isolated from everyone that you know, and you're quite possibly facing the last days of your life.
You also depict his rule in a wider context in terms of its effect on Ethiopians. As the characters in your novel discover for themselves, you know, this was an emperor who rewarded some of his people but neglected most of them.
Yes, you know, and as I was researching, I was trying to answer my own questions about how could the famine get this bad without a lot of help from the government. And one of my characters who is working in the famine-stricken areas, and one of my other characters, Mickey, is talking to him, says, the emperor did come, but it was too late. Help did come, but, you know, it didn't happen fast enough.
So we should say that in the end, the exposure of a famine in Ethiopia seemed to be the catalyzing factor that propelled action against the throne.
Yes, the famine really was the thing that just broke the floodgates of unrest. There was already protests going on. There were demonstrations. You know, the army was upset with low pay and poor living conditions. People wanted reform, and there were deep, deep class divisions and ethnic conflict. And then everybody started hearing about this famine and how bad it was. And that was it at that point.
Let's talk about this military coup that brought the monarchy down. Now, this is a group that called itself the Derg. The Derg was led by a man by the name of
Mengistu Haile Mariam.
Right, who does not figure in your novel by name.
No.
I wondered about that. Why is that so?
You know, I had to make a decision in this book as to when I would stick to historical fact or historical names and when I would begin to use fictional accounts and fictional names. With the emperor, because he was such a legend and such a myth in many ways, I was able to work with him as a fiction writer. I was able to imagine certain things that people may not know. With Mengistu, he was very, very real, very immediate. And for me to try to step into his shoes and imagine him, I think I would have to make some sacrifices in terms of the story I told. I wanted this book to be about the victims of the Derg, not exactly the perpetrators of this violence. I wanted to focus on those who suffered.
But, you know, there are some estimates that say that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people perished under the Derg, you know,
yes.
under the, was it 15 years or so that the Derg was in power, about that?
Yes.
And so by not naming Mengistu, do you feel as if perhaps you're protecting the guilty? I mean, this guy's alive. He's in Zimbabwe
yes.
as we speak.
Yes.
Unless he's taken a vacation somewhere. Why spare him? Why protect the guilty?
It wasn't for me about sparing him. I think it was about exposing the humanity and the devastation of those people that suffered under his rule. If I put Mengistu in this book, he would have overshadowed the stories of everybody else. You know, it's funny because I thought about, am I protecting him? And I don't think I am, because anybody who reads this book will probably wonder, I wonder who this man is. And in the back of my book, I do name him. I'm hoping that if we can understand the humanity of those who suffered through this, that we start to investigate beyond the pages of this book and start to wonder, why isn't he in Ethiopia? Why hasn't his life sentence and then death penalty, why haven't those things happened?
Maza Mengistu wrote Beneath the Lion's Gaze. She joined us from our New York bureau. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.